The logo for Magnolia Pictures appears. The logo for HBO documentary films. The logo for the New Zealand Film Commission is followed by the logo for MPI Media Group. The logos for Fumes and Horseshoe Films.
It's been a harrowing week in the news, so now it's something much lighter and more fun. It's time for New Zealand's favourite pop culture reporter, David Farrier.
David Farrier interviews Justin Bieber.
What do you make of New Zealanders so far?
Me? I think that they've been nice. Everyone's been cool so far.
What's the main thing you're trying to achieve here? Because obviously you've created a bit of...
Survival. He's dead.
David sits at his desk in a newsroom.
Now we're going to do spin around.
Yeah.
Oh, holy.
He practices aerial acrobatics with a partner.
So disorientating. Whoa.
He interviews a woman with her donkeys.
And what's your nickname that you've got now?
The Donkey Lady. Look out! Oh, look, we're going to have a reporter kick.
It's quite a kick.
The tall, friendly, bespectacled journalist in his 30s grabs copies from a photocopier.
I can't say I've ever interviewed anyone that looks exactly like you before.
Really?
A man dressed as a heavy metal demon laughs, and the title, Tickled, appears in white text over a shot of David as he sits at his desk and starts to type.
I've made a career out of looking at the weird and bizarre side of life. So when I discovered a strange video online, I knew I'd found my next story.
David arches an eyebrow and laughs as he brings up a website for Jane O'Brien Media.
An American company called Jane O'Brien Media was running a monthly event. Young athletes from anywhere on the planet could apply. If selected, they got free flights to LA, 4 nights in a really nice hotel, and $1,500 cash. It was called Competitive Endurance Tickling.
With a CET, Competitive Endurance Tickling Group, we got here. And first of all, I'd like to give a shout out to you, Jane O'Brien Media, for making this happen.
Thank you.
I know,
Thanks, Jane.
We all appreciate it.
A group of five fit guys in their late teens sit on a gym mat in Adidas gear.
Fuck off.
One of the guys lies on his belly with his outstretched arms tied together, as his friend sits on his back and two guys sit by his feet and tickle him.
Their Facebook page was popular with thousands of likes. And with everyone in Adidas gear, it seemed to be some kind of tickling league.
Another guy lies on his back with arms and feet bound, as two guys sit on his front and tickle.
It was one of the strangest sports I'd seen.
No!
David reaches out on Facebook.
So, of course, I told Jane O'Brien Media I'd like to do an interview. Instead of getting a yes or no, I got this.
To be brutally frank, association with a homosexual journalist is not something we will embrace. We desperately do not want a homosexual participant base applying for this project. My concern is that your journalistic style, fan base, and reputation in your own country. Regards, Debbie Kuhn, Jane O'Brien Media.
David stares at the screen, puzzled.
It was a strange response, especially considering the sport did seem slightly... gay. And over the coming weeks, Debbie and Jane kept emailing.
The competitive reality tickling is a passionately and exclusively heterosexual athletic endurance activity. We recently read a Googled article about the knowledge of your living with a homosexual partner becoming quite a stir in New Zealand. The remainder of the globe does not, in all corners, share some of the more liberal acceptance of your lifestyle.
To me, anything concerning homosexuality is at best an objective disorder. Shame on you, little gay Kiwi faggot.
The camera lingers on the slur.
It was hard to take the insult seriously, given what Jane was producing. If anything, it made me more curious than ever.
Two cars sit outside a house.
Your call has been forwarded to the voicemail for Jane O'Brien Media.
David sits at a computer with a keen-eyed bearded man.
With no one picking up the phone, I got my geeky friend Dylan to do some digging into this mysterious company and these overly aggressive women.
Dylan searches domain registrations.
It's janeobrienmedia.com. It's registered to...
He discovered that while Jane O'Brien Media seemed to be operated out of America, it was owned by a company in Germany called Nida Dietzen, which owned nearly 300 domain names all related to tickling.
Papers pinned to a corkboard list the websites.
This tickling wormhole was getting deeper, so Dylan and I blogged about what we'd found.
With his lorikeet and his cat on the couch with him, David composes a tweet on his laptop. On his screen, another guy in Adidas tickles his friend.
So the pay's good.
What? Okay, hold on.
Our story got a lot of attention, being picked up on websites like Reddit and an American podcast.
Back up.
When I say competitive tickling, what do you think I'm talking about?
I mean, I think you're talking about of some sort of organized sport,
yeah,
of tickling.
All right, so basically what happened was this kind of blew up on the internet this week because a dude in New Zealand, a reporter, like happened across this Facebook page.
But is it just for fun? Obviously it's just for fun.
Is it just for fun? It's tickling.
Sorry, I don't think that question's ever been asked about tickling before. That's like a Martian question about tickling. Is it for fun?
People were so interested by what we discovered, Dylan and I decided to make a documentary about this utterly bizarre subject.
Home camera footage, filmed by David, shows his walk to the letterbox as the sun sets. He holds up a letter addressed to him.
2 weeks later, we heard from Jane O'Brien's New York attorney, Romeo Salter. He had recently made headlines in a case involving a gay porn star who chopped a man up and mailed his body parts to some politicians. Things certainly weren't getting any less weird. His letter told us to stop what we were doing, or else.
A formidable letter demands that they cease and desist.
Soon, we were receiving emails from Salter telling us that legal action had been filed in the U.S.
A highlighted section reads, "You are urged to seek legal action in both countries."
I had no money to hire a New Zealand lawyer, let alone face the American justice system. Then, to top it all off, Jane O'Brien Media told us they were flying 3 people across the world from New York to New Zealand to see us. They're clearly serious about stopping this documentary.
David waits at the international arrivals gate of Auckland International Airport with a sign which reads, "Welcome Marco Realmonte and Jane O'Brien Media."
Jane wouldn't tell us what flight they were arriving on, but she did tell us the day. So from 5 a.m., I waited at arrivals. Not sure what to expect, I figured I'd disarm the situation with a rainbow-colored sign.
Marco, a smiling 40-year-old in a baseball cap, scarf, and baseball jacket, walks out and shakes his hand warmly. 2 men, one white-haired, one young and gaunt, join him.
I thought I'd make up a good welcoming sign.
Nice to meet you.
Good, how are you, sir?
So nice for you to come and see us.
That's all right, I thought I'd arrive. How was the flight?
It was wonderful. Really
oh,
wonderful.
Good.
Got some good sleep.
In New Zealand?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
Hey, guys.
Kevin, Clark.
Kevin, nice to meet you, sir.
I'm Adam.
David, nice to meet you.
This is, look at this sign. We want to keep this. Can we have that for later?
You can, I gift this to you.
It's gorgeous,
as a sign. I thought it was pretty good.
Thank you so much, it's wonderful.
Well, look, let's line up a time to meet this week.
We just need to rest today, and then tomorrow, actually, if you're free, Tomorrow will be good.
Okay, tomorrow works well.
Thank you very much for coming out. What a surprise. So nice.
Oh, that's okay. It's the New Zealand hospitality. So you can get me there.
Camera right now.
Yes, yeah, we're just rolling from the beginning. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You didn't do that without telling me first.
Okay. We've got a thing in New Zealand, we're okay to film in public spaces. So I'm just following the journey.
We're not going to have a good time if you do this. If you don't tell me what you're doing first, we're not going to get along.
Okay, all right. Yeah, well, we
really don't like this either, man. It's not
just, okay, well, I mean, we're shooting a documentary, so we'll keep...
I understand what you think you're doing, but I'm not going to allow you to treat me without respect.
Okay.
And that's what you're doing right now.
Okay, we're okay to film in public spaces in New Zealand, so we're doing that here. All right, we'll see you soon.
We'll talk later.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks again.
All right, see you soon. No worries, we'll talk soon.
Marco and his gaunt young colleague follow the large white-haired man, who has stormed off. At night, Maungahau Mountain casts a shadow over the city of Auckland.
Hello?
Hey, Marco, it's Dave Ferry. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, you're good. How are you settling into Auckland?
We love it here. You know, we wanted to just, you know, at least for the first meeting, just sort of speak without cameras and just let you know kind of what we're doing.
Okay, no, that sounds good to me. I think just Dylan and I both talked and we just weren't confident or didn't think it was a good idea just to go straight to a room. Maybe it's a cultural thing, but a conference room of your choosing, whether it's at the Hilton or elsewhere, is absolutely fine.
David and Dylan walk to the meeting.
One of the reasons that it's hard for us to go on camera or to take part in the documentary is that, first of all, we don't think it would be very good for the company that we work for, because it seems like the spin, we have no control over what the spin would be.
No, we do not.
And, you know, we have nothing to do with the legal matters. You know, I would love to see you guys be able to go in a more positive direction. And I don't think that you're going to be able to find the answers that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And as far as Jane goes, I've never met Jane. You know, whoever is emailing you, I've never met this person. Just a piece of advice, though. I mean, just kind of off the record between us, take the lawsuit seriously, because there's a lot of money and the lawsuit...
Yeah, well, I mean, that's obvious, you know, first class tickets to New Zealand. You know, clearly there's a lot of money involved in this story.
So, I mean, just, you know, whatever you plan to do is actually going to be worth the trouble that this person is probably going to put you through.
Can I just ask one quick question of you?
Sure.
I know that Marco and Adam haven't met Jane or Debbie. Have you met Jane or Debbie?
No,
but does it worry you that you haven't met the person?
Absolutely not. There are people in this world, in that world, in the world with a lot of money, that keep a firewall between themselves and what they do.
We have been attacked for weeks now by Jane and Brian.
I wake up every morning to a message from Jane and Brian Media, who you guys work for. With a list of various personal attacks and also legal threats. That's been happening daily.
You started this fight. I didn't.
No, this is
you were the one that decided this is what you were going to do. You mocked us. You've done everything you could. You attacked us in an airport. You sidewinded us. Yeah. Let me make a point here. If you want to stick your head in the glass first, do it.
Figures are barely visible in the footage filmed through the boardroom window from the street. Later in the week, David stares at a camera, in shaky, grainy footage.
Kevin didn't take to Dylan very well and wants to meet me alone. I quickly make this covert piece of technology, a camera and a coffee cup.
He films the white-haired man as they walk.
What's the end game here? What do you get at the end, even if you get everything you want? And what are we risking here? You know, do we really want someone coming after you with all that money?
I've known a lot of rich people in my life. I worked for a lot of them. They don't work by the same set of rules. They don't dangle them out of buildings anymore, but they don't have to. And that's the thing. They start suing, and you're done halfway through or a quarter of the way through because it costs so much to defend yourself.
So unless we stop the doco, we're going to be fucked. Really, essentially, that's what it comes down to,
really. I'm not going to use those words directly because that wouldn't be prudent. But let me rephrase, unless you stopped, unless we can figure out a way to ameliorate that situation, we all are.
Kevin's lower torso is in shot as they stop along the riverside.
Facing lawsuits in a company with deep pockets, I wondered if we should just walk away.
Marco speaks on the phone.
But Dylan was part of this now and didn't want to give in to a bunch of bullies.
Dylan wants to pursue this on his own?
I gather from what he's saying, yeah.
Okay. If Dylan wants to do that, Dylan does that. Dylan will do that. If you don't want to do that, then just walk away from it.
Yeah.
And I will. Dylan will be dealt with accordingly.
How was school?
The main thing, David, that I wanted to tell you is that I think that you're brilliant and that you have a great career. So I was really, really happy to find out that you wanted just to distance yourself from it. And I don't understand why Dylan would not want to. What I'm worried about, too, I know Kevin says, well, if he wants to go ahead with it, let him go ahead with it. But he'd become a real target. And believe me, it will be really ugly for him. And I would hate to see that, too, because I know he has his family. And, you know, he's probably a good bloke down deep.
Dylan spends time with his young family as Marco hangs up the phone. Later, a plane arrives in Los Angeles.
I've never heard threats like this in my life. And all of this over some tickling. Kevin and Marco fly back to America. And a few days later, Dylan and I follow. Something about bullies with way too much money has convinced me I shouldn't drop it. Plus, we think there's a competitive tickling shoot happening this week. We've reached out to nearly 100 boys in the videos, but they all seem too nervous to talk.
A muscly guy with shoulder tattoos and a cap lies down at a weight bench.
Finally, TJ agrees to meet us.
We met Kevin Clark downtown LA somewhere. I can't remember exactly where I was at, but there's a studio. Seemed pretty normal at the time. My first impression of him, you know, he was just like kind of a little weird. You know, I was young at the time, didn't think nothing of it, and I was like, cool, you know, $2,000 or whatever, yeah, it's gonna be cool.
A young TJ wears an orange Adidas jersey.
It was actually a hard time for my family. A family member of mine was going through cancer, and money was tight at the household. So I was a little bit desperate at the time as well. For money, working on the side, and do what I can. So when I heard this dollar sign, I was like, yeah, you know, I'll definitely do that. And then I went inside and noticed that it was all guys in there. And that's when I was like, oh, dang, like.
TJ is tied down, straddled by a guy.
And I didn't know I was gonna get tied down. I had no idea what I would be for, honestly. I was like, okay, what? At that point, I was like, all right, you know what? It's already going down. I don't really know what it's for, but hopefully it never gets out.
The athletic guy atop TJ tickles his armpits, and he begins to laugh and squirm. A second guy appears and starts to tickle TJ's exposed belly.
No, not any fucking... fuck, that actually tickled, dude.
Two more guys appear at his feet and smile as they tickle him.
Being violated on some different levels right now. There was other athletes. There was MMA guys. There was a bodybuilder. And then there was a couple actors, normal actors. I've seen some of them on commercials, TV commercials. Normal guys, like completely normal people. Fuck off my feet! It was a torture project. That's what I believe Kevin Clark told me. There was something to do with even a military tactic or something like that. He was gonna do I think he said Jane was doing a project on using tickling as a military tactic. And at that point, I knew it's complete bullshit, you know? I was like, okay, yeah, military is gonna use tickling as a torture tactic.
When did the video come back to get you?
About a year, maybe a little more ago.
In grainy footage of a football game, TJ catches a pass for a touchdown.
I'll Google myself once in a while to read old articles or see what teams might have listed me in an article or tryouts.
The top search results for TJ's name are all tickling videos.
And to my surprise, a video was on YouTube.
Hello, I'm TJ, and I'm here on the tickling competition. And first question is, are you ticklish? Well, obviously I'm ticklish if I'm here, so that's kind of a silly question, but...
It was just me sitting in front of the camera talking about the tickling process. Just weird things, and so I was like, okay, it's not that bad.
When you were asked, are you ticklish, how do you normally respond and why? Normally I say, no, I'm not ticklish.
So I emailed Jane and I asked her to take the video down. She didn't ever reply. So I took the matters into my own hand and I told YouTube that they're illegally using my name. So YouTube took the video down. That's when it all started.
Now I am laughing. I don't think you've grasped the magnitude of what you have provoked. I'm interested to see how you handle the fallout. So far, badly. Regards, Debbie J. Coon.
That's when this Deborah person popped into my life. I mean, just all hell broke loose. Every kind of video search you can find, it was up there. And then it pops up in my emails, and then it pops up more on YouTube.
So intense.
And it just starts appearing everywhere. This video, just all of them start blowing.
Different browsers pop up, showing his tickling videos on Vio, Vimeo, FC2 Video, and Dailymotion.
And there was threats. It said, watch out, your family better watch out because we're going to put your last name to shame. Anytime you search your last name, it's going to pop up like direct threats.
A website with blurred writing appears.
They ended up making a website, put my personal information, my name, my address, my personal phone number, my email address, all with just dumb lies. Then Debbie Coon starts going off on me, left and right, sending emails to the high school that I coach at.
I have additional information as a past employer. You don't want this guy in your league. Can you afford the distraction, the press, with an outed gay guy having a male tickling fetish in which he likes to tickle and be tickled by tied up other gay athletes and bodybuilders?
False accusations saying I'm a drug addict and I was a child molester and I'm gay and this and that, which none of those things have ever been true.
The words, sexual deviant, male tickling fetish, and what a role model, appear in an email. Practice film shows TJ sprinting down the field and receiving passes.
I've always been very proud. The way I walk around, I'm proud of who I am. You know what I mean, so to speak? I'm confident in myself as an athlete, as a person, as a player. Well, when I'd go to tryouts, the first thing I would think about is, well, I wonder if these coaches have looked up that video. And it's happened. It has happened. I've been released from football teams. They've told me, that I'm the best player on that team at that position, but because it is a distraction for the media, they don't need that attention, and they'll go with somebody else because they don't feel explaining it. You know, and they've actually dealt with a lot of things because of it. It's cost me money, it's cost me jobs, it's cost me harassment, which is exactly what Debbie Coon and Jane O'Brien wanted. So, I mean, more or less, in that aspect, they've won.
He sits on the weight bench with hunched shoulders. A double-decker train drives along the Los Angeles River.
It's obvious we're not the only ones being harassed by Jane O'Brien Media, and there are so many websites made up like TJ's, which seem to exist purely to shame the guys who've been tickled.
A sign says DFLA Studio.
What goes on at these shoots, and why is she so aggressive? Dylan's been doing some research, and he thinks he knows where the next shoot is happening. We stake out the studio, hoping to find out how a competitive tickling shoot goes down.
Okay, car.
A car pulls up outside the three-story brick and glass building.
And another car, two cars.
the car.
Across the road, David and Dylan sit in the front of the car as their cameraman films.
Can you see what the car's doing? I've lost him.
They spot Marco walking into the building.
Who's that guy?
Oh, that's Marco.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got four guys.
Four muscly guys follow Marco inside, and his gaunt younger colleague waves.
That's the guy from New Zealand.
Yep.
Here's Kevin.
Kevin gets out of a car and ambles into the building, laden down with tote bags. The day passes as the camera focuses on the glass facade and fire escape of the building.
We could hear laughter coming out of the vents. It went on for hours. The boys occasionally taking breaks.
David and Dylan watch the action on portable monitors, and later, two young guys sit on the curb and smoke as Kevin speaks to another by the door.
Yeah, this is actually fucking creepy as fuck.
Like, this feels to me like a pep talk.
Yeah.
As the day wraps up, I want to give Kevin one last chance to talk about what's going on. With pending lawsuits, I'm cautious and don't want to storm into the studio.
I haven't locked the door.
I think we go.
All right.
Okay, let's go.
Yep, we're good.
Dylan hoists the camera onto his shoulders and follows David to the building.
Come this way. There we go. We've been spotted.
Their cameraman joins with a second camera as David stops just outside the front door, holding a microphone.
Hello, Marco. Hey, guys.
David waits patiently by the door, and as people stop and look at him, he greets the gaunt younger man.
Adam, how's it going?
Kevin appears.
Hello, sir.
You're not welcome here.
We're not welcome here?
And I'm calling the police. Bye. Out.
All right, well, we'll head off. You don't want to do any final chats or anything? Last opportunity?
Adam walks to the door and closes it.
That's all we can do.
David walks away, and back in the car, he drives through L.A.
Turn right on Bellevue Avenue, then take the first right.
I think, yeah, up to New Zealand and that, I think it's safe to say that we don't have an interview with Kevin or Marco.
And we certainly weren't getting any more of the competitors to talk on camera. They were all too terrified, hoping if they stayed quiet, the harassment would go away.
I mean, are we making the whole thing worse for everyone? That's by even being here.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I worry that we make it worse for some people who have got through the worst of it, you know?
They drive past a collision on the freeway, and later, the camera is sent through the security scanner at the airport. David is scanned with a metal detector, and they catch their domestic flight.
Jane O'Brien clearly isn't being honest about what the videos are for, and I'm convinced that despite the Adidas gear, it's not a real sport.
In Orlando, they collect their bags from the conveyor.
I've tracked down a man in Florida who also makes tickling videos, but unlike Jane, is more than happy to talk about it.
They drive along the palm tree-lined roads and arrive at a suburban house. A menacing dark room suddenly brightens as studio lights turn on in a white room with a tickled chair. A tall, solidly built man with an easygoing grin positions the lights and a camera around the V-shaped chair. Richard Ivey, tickling fetishist.
People ask me about what is the appeal of tickling. It's kind of like the
whips and chains, you know, bonded sort of thing where somebody's getting flogged, but it's just really brought down a level. You know, it's like kind of a sadistic exerting your will on someone else and having them do something out of their control, like laughing without being able to get away, as if it's tickle torture to them.
And a lot of people don't seem to know about the tickling fetish. Do you think it's a little bit more unknown?
Oh, totally. Yeah, completely. Because most people, you know about a foot fetish. But tickling, most people are like, oh, wow, is that a thing? It was in 1999. I had just gotten out of grad school. You know, so I just got a video camera, put together a little business plan, talked to one of my friends, and he financed me for, I started the site, I think for $6,000 or $7,000. It got pretty much an immediate response.
Adverts appear for myfriendsfeet.com, the hugest, most giant, colossal and awesome male foot, sock and tickling site on the planet. Richard lazes by his large pool.
I was making enough after a year to quit my job and do it full time.
David stands in the white room with Richard.
So this is it.
This is it.
This is the studio.
Mm-hmm.
The chair.
And then the changing room, bathroom.
You're right, and so this whole place is purely for the tickling.
Yep.
He follows Richard to another set.
Well, see, we've got a few different spaces, right?
Yeah. I used to do all this out of my house.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, a parade of people coming in, do all this, have to clean up, have to clean it up before a shoot, and this way I can walk away.
Yeah, this is great.
I'm tired, going home.
You're done. Well, it's just work, right? It's like work, home.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Have you done stuff like this before for anyone else, or is this sort of a unique thing for you?
Unique thing? I never worked for a tickling site before.
Okay. No. And what did you first think when you got the pitch?
I mean, I laughed about it. I'm like, this can't be really serious. Like, people really can't enjoy watching this or getting it done. But I said, why not? You know, I'm more of like the risk taker. I'd rather say I did something than didn't do something. So I came down, really was kind of nervous, didn't know what to expect. But Richard put me at ease. And once you're trapped in, you're there. So, I mean, you might as well enjoy it.
A young model in a singlet and shorts sits in the chair.
Okay, ready?
I think you're take it easy on me today.
Yeah. That's good.
Richard locks his legs in stocks and ties his hands above his head.
Gotta enjoy my freedom now.
Yeah.
Because I cannot
wave goodbye.
I am not getting out. Oh, shit.
The model sighs with a smile.
The world of tickling.
So, catch your breath.
Breath caught.
Okay.
Richard moves swiftly to the man's left armpit and starts tickling. The man squirms around, and Richard swings behind him, attacking both armpits.
I'll tell everybody what a tough guy you are.
The model laughs uncontrollably as Richard pulls off his sneakers and tickles his feet. David watches the tickling with bewilderment and concern as Richard pulls the guy's singlet up and tickles his bare torso.
Oh my gosh. I hate this.
The man writhes and laughs as Richard enjoys his role as torturer. Slow motion close-ups show Richard grinning toothlessly, and his victim struggling against the straps, with a face scrunched in agonized laughter. Another shot shows the model tensing so hard that he lifts out of the V-shaped chair, as Richard tickles his bare feet.
So when did you realize that you found tickling
to be an erotic thing?
I was very young, you know, probably 5 or 6, you know, very, very young.
He runs a finger along the model's nipple.
You see something in a cartoon or a magazine that's, you know, kind of interests you as a little kid. And for me, it would be, you know, like cartoon characters being tickled or tied up or, you know, that sort of thing. And it would, you know, fascinate me, but I had no idea why.
Richard brings out an electric toothbrush and runs it along the model's chest. The model jolts upwards repeatedly as Richard holds the toothbrush to his back. As the session ends, the model falls back, exhausted.
How do you feel?
I feel tired. I feel sweaty.
Need some water?
Yeah, water will probably work.
I started to become comfortable with this fetish and this part of myself, and started to really realize that it was a part of myself when I got on AOL and then did a search for what I was looking for and found that, wow, there's actually, you know, quite a lot of other people that are into this.
A blonde woman with puffed up hair smiles over her shoulder for a glamour shot.
At the time, late 90s, was somebody that posted on the message boards a lot. And she said her name was Terry Tickle. And Terry DeSisto, she put in what her real name was. She always had a picture of herself, you know, a blonde, pretty, college-age girl. And she always posted the same verbiage, something like, this is not porn, my interest is in tickling. And she just said that she was a tickling fanatic. And, but I mean, these posts were everywhere. And then some videos started popping up, you know, very, you know, innocent. And those are probably the first tickle videos that I ever saw on the internet.
The video Ticklish Brad plays on an old computer.
There are still traces of Terry Tickle online from the mid-90s, and as Richard said, she was tickle-obsessed. Like Jane, she also hired other people to shoot the video she wanted.
Dave Starr, Terry's casting agent.
Well, the, just strange rich brat, I guess you could say. Someone who got her rocks off by seeing guys tied and tickled, obviously an extreme dominatrix.
For most of his life, Dave Starr's worked on the edges of the entertainment industry, even acting in a couple of pornos. During the mid-90s, he noticed Terry's online posts wanting tickling videos. Lots of them.
The craggy 60-year-old drives.
Terry was out there looking for guys 18 to 23. And I figured that it would be something right up my alley based on my working in casting.
What sort of things was she recruiting for specifically?
Tickle torture films, tickle torture videos.
Can you turn that thing around so I can see it?
A topless blonde guy is tied to a bed.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that's good.
She claimed it was for a private collection. So I was thinking, okay, amateur hour.
The guy scrunches up his face in agony.
But I rapidly took it into a professional level.
Okay, are you ticklish?
Yes, I am.
Okay, step forward about a foot. Okay, and place your hands behind your head, interclasp them. Step back a little further, though. Okay, right about there. Okay, interclasp them, and do not release them at any time during the entire tickle test. Do your worst on this one.
We will put them in through their stage one audition, which is the questions and the test tickles.
Do not collapse. Stay looking up at us.
A guy stands with hands clasped behind his head as someone tickles him from behind.
Stay facing us.
A woman tickles a guy tied to a dining table.
Stage two is tying him to the table, tickling him, flipping him over 15 minutes, kind of like a sausage of meat.
Another guy lies on his front.
And then after that, we had the competitive tickling at that point, tickle wars and stuff like that. And that would involve a massive production.
Two topless guys in board shorts and puka shell necklaces tickle a peroxide blonde guy, who lies face down on the ground, laughing uncontrollably.
Okay, don't laugh. You're giggling already, aren't you? Well, you just might be the type of person that David Starr is looking for. He is a Hollywood producer working on a new reality-based game show called Tickle Talk.
The storyline is the person is arrested in amusement park for not having enough fun. He's taken to the mouse hole and tickled by beautiful women until it's determined he's not enough fun.
That might be preferable to eating rats or grubs on Survivor, but just barely. I'm Ann James, KSEN, K96 News.
Dave Starr had steady work for 5 years, even when Terry was hospitalized for 6 months. During that time, she just wrote letters specifying exactly what she wanted in the tickling videos.
David, Merry Christmas. So sorry I'm in the hospital with mono. David, just a few things I need you to do. Tell him I will send the computer as soon as I'm well. His name is Josh. I hope to be online again in Feb. I'm still sick in bed. That's all for now. TD.
Terry signs off her letter with a smiley face.
My most ticklish place is, I guess, definitely, like, have to be in my legs more than, like, my armpits or my feet, I think.
At that time, she wanted to put up, and did indeed put up a website for a while, unauthorized releasing of the videos against the agreement of the talent. And I flipped my lid. And lo and behold, she goes and registers domains in their names and then proceeds to release all their content onto those particular websites.
Dave smiles grimly, sitting in front of a pool.
She was like sending me emails about what do you think your mother's gonna think about this? And then, like, I'd be like, you know, fuck you, bitch. And she'd be like, totally antagonizing, like, she was such a cunt.
Former participant Alden sits in a dark room with his face obscured.
It was an assault not just on me, but on my family, you know? I mean, I couldn't have a more conservative family. You know, I'm in a family full of Republican, like, military people, and I was a professional, like, banker, and here I am, like, with basically a porn site where I'm not naked, but, I mean, I might as well be. You know, this ruining my life at the time, that's how I felt. It certainly was affecting my ability to function because it was so emotionally draining. Part of the reason was because there's nobody to help me. It's like you lose control over, you know, your life.
Alden slumps back in his chair. Dave Starr walks down a busy street at night.
Well, that's when the crap started happening with me. You decide, okay, because I closed down submissions for her, and I guess I'm basically was like her tickling drug dealer. And since she wasn't getting her drug anymore, she was going through tickle withdrawals.
And what happened?
I started receiving the strange postcards, the strange messages. The talent was starting to receive messages And she also deployed a thing called the phone blaster, which was to call everybody with obscene messages.
You have been identified as a known associate of homosexual pornographer David W. Starr. Your phone number, personal information, and your precise relationship with David Starr are entirely known and subject to publication on the internet. David Starr does not value your privacy. Harry, horny, and hook-nosed. Thank you for your time, interest, and attention to this advisory. Goodbye.
This person's on drugs. This person's gotta be on crystal or something. Or taking cocaine up the ass or something like that. It was weird. Well, I'm glad to be able to make this available to you.
David kept a number of letters Terry had sent him and was keen to show me the extent of the abuse.
All right. This is the magic stuff.
All right, what have we got?
Dave pulls a plastic bag full of letters from the trunk of his car.
Yep. These are basically copies of what she would post online.
So who's Barbara? Is that your...
That's my mother.
Hairy and horny, hairy and horny. Jewish tickle filmer David W. Starr is hook-nosed, hairy and horny.
Or she's used that tagline for many, many, many times.
What did your mother think of this stuff when this turned up? I mean...
Actually, her phrase was, here's a note that she left me because she would hold these for me in the mail and basically just say, here's another nasty thing. And that one actually is unopened. I've never even opened it to this date.
He opens it.
And let's see what our little illustrious friend had to say.
Oh, God, so it's a cat.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Can't spell or shit. David W. Starr has brought this upon you. Perhaps you wish, perhaps instead, that David, your failure, not Edward, were dead. That's a reference to my brother, who is dead. He's really extreme, a little bit psycho.
But I mean, when you're getting all this material and some of it's talking about your brother who's passed away and writing this stuff to your mother, I mean, that's not nice to be receiving that on a weekly basis.
No, but it was on a weekly basis, yeah.
David pulls more letters out.
Yeah, where did they have the time? Jesus, a birthday card.
Yep.
Happy birthday. Edward Starr dead. This is really cruel, right?
It's very sick.
Dave Starr and David look at a card with a dog on it.
The more I hear about Terry DeSisto, the more she sounds like Jane O'Brien. To state the obvious, they both really enjoy tickling. They also like being in control and lashing out.
David waves Starr off as he drives away.
And it turns out Terry's habits started way before Dave Starr got involved. I've found a journalist who'd spent a year uncovering the truth about Terry DeSisto during the 90s.
Terry DeSisto's MO was to bait these boys into making tickling videos with things that they wanted, right? You know, I mean, imagine being a teenage boy and, like, you get this random email saying, you know, I saw your posting about Fish concert and how would you like to go? Or I can send you $1,000 cash. And you're like, you're living in your dorm at James Madison University. And you're like, yeah, sure. You're going to send me $1,000 cash. Right. FedEx pulls up in front of your dorm the next day, and there's 10 $100 bills. You haven't done anything. She would just keep sending them whatever they wanted, you know, computers, cameras, more cash, tickets to rock concerts. And at some point, even a teenage boy has all the toys that they want. And they say, I'm done. But I think the thing that she hates the most was no. It was like a bomb went off. And she'd say, well, if you don't do it, I'm going to make your life hell. I'm going to send clips of these videos to your wrestling coach. I'm going to send clips of these videos to your mom. I'm going to send clips of these videos to your grandmother. I'm going to send clips of these videos to the president of your university. I'm going to post them all over the internet. I'm going to pretend to be you and do things on the internet that are going to create a terrible reputation for you. I'm going to shut down the entire college campus computer system at your college, and they're going to think it's you. And then it happened.
Hal Karp, a weathered journalist, speaks in a diner as a recreation shows Terry typing frantically and the login screen for Drexel University vanishing. Deborah Skopelnikov, bright-eyed with gray hair, speaks.
The first story I did was because she was attacking Drexel University. And I found the student who had made a number of videos for her.
A man laughs while tied down.
And when he came to Philadelphia to go to college, she wanted him to continue making these videos, and he wanted to cut off his relationship with her. And she retaliated on so many levels. Their email servers' computers were being shut down with these denial of service attacks that indicated that they were coming from him.
Two men in suits walk through a hallway.
Email bombing the White House, indicating that it came from him. Yeah, that's pretty serious stuff when the Secret Service shows up in your college dorm and you're 19 years old.
They bang on a door, and an article by Deborah appears.
I was just curious, and I somehow started contacting Terry, and on AOL, she had an account.
Terry sips white wine.
And we would have these chats late at night. And I was curious what kind of mind was behind this celebrated internet personage. And it was kind of crazy. We would have these conversations, and she would, when she realized that I did wine, she would say, oh, I'm having a glass of Chardonnay. And I could just hear this voice, because as it went on, it was almost like she was completely intoxicated with this power that she had to be so destructive against people.
Terry places her Chardonnay glass down, and back in the diner, Hal Karp punches over the counter, writing in his notepad.
I got word about a kid. He refused to make the videos. He posted that he needed some help, and somebody said they would help him.
A zip file named Terry Tickle downloads.
And somehow he got emailed a file. And he was told, if you email this zip file to Terry, she will leave you alone.
The download completes.
And then he sent me that zip file.
Hundreds of document files appear.
You know, and I remember opening it up and thinking, wow, you know, this is it. Like, this is the smoking gun.
Hal looks amazed as a close-up scrolls down a lengthy document.
The zip file contained documents from her hard drive. As expected, there were files relating to tickling shoots. But they also revealed the true identity of Terry Tickle.
The document ends in, later and thanks, Dave D. Flicking through more documents, a name appears, David P. D'Amato.
David D'Amato. She is really he, right?
A document shows an address in Garden City, New York, and another is signed off as David P. D'Amato, assistant principal and director of guidance.
He was an assistant principal in a high school?
Deborah smiles wryly at the memory.
I just couldn't believe it. I don't know why, but it just seemed, here is this sadistic person exploiting these young people, often underage, making their lives miserable, embarrassing them to an extent that it goes against everything that an educator should be. be doing?
A scan down David D'Amato's resume shows a page of high schools listed in his previous experience.
When I did some more checking, I found out that he had worked at like 8 schools in 10 years. Which to me was always a red flag that there was something else going on. I mean, that's more than just sheer incompetence. And then I found social security numbers for her that he had gotten fraudulently with dead people's names.
Terry DeSisto's date of death is highlighted in the document.
So I contacted the FBI. I turned over all my information to them. Within a week, they busted him.
A large jowly-faced man sneers at a camera in a grainy black and white mugshot, and a document named United States versus David P. D'Amato appears.
We were shocked at the sentencing because he got off so easy for somebody who had done so much damage. To me, it was just extraordinary. And to not have restrictions on their internet access after that, how could you? And the idea that he was going to law school was just absurd.
It turns out David D'Amato's father, George, co-founded one of Wall Street's biggest law firms, D'Amato and Lynch. And David got a really great lawyer. Instead of prison, D'Amato was allowed to serve his sentence in a halfway house while he studied law at his father's alma mater, Fordham University.
Hal is worked up.
The judge, for some reason, decided that he would endorse the law school path, right? Because, like, this is exactly the kind of person that should be a lawyer, right? Somebody who is defrauded people, somebody who has stolen people's identities. A federal freaking crime, right? like stolen identity, stolen a social security number of a dead woman, of 2 dead people, right? It said David D'Amato, 39, of Garden City, pled guilty for 2 federal counts of computer fraud abuse.
D'Amato pleads guilty in a court transcript.
Nothing about the tickling, nothing about the boys, nothing about the identity theft, 0, nothing.
Once Fordham became aware of D'Amato's convictions, his admission was revoked. No longer able to study law, D'Amato finished his sentence in prison. But I've realized that didn't stop the tickling.
So this is 2002, so this is writing to David Starr, who would shoot these boys tickling and then send the videos to Terry.
Because she what she would have is,
do you want your
back in the early days, back in the early days, Terry would have friends tickle them and send them they were amateur tapes. These are now professional.
Well, this is, look at the date.
Oh, two.
Look at the date.
Is the T Terry?
Yeah, it's Terry writing. So that was during lockup time.
Oh, in jail. I get it. David, a few other things. Email. Explain my illness. Oh, tell him I'll pay everything owed as soon as the mono is better. Oh, get headshots. My God. Oh, my God. I won't be online for a while as I am very sick. Oh.
Deborah reads D'Amato's letters to Dave Starr with giddy horror.
Couldn't stop.
No. No.
It seems that since the mid-90s, David D'Amato has never stopped finding elaborate ways to get young men to tickle each other. His persona of Terry Tickles seems to have dropped off the radar around 2006. A while later, Jane O'Brien arrived on the scene.
David and Dylan sit on their phones.
We've posted this theory online, and David D'Amato is not happy. He's hired not one, but 2 private investigators, one in New Zealand and one in New York. The message is clear. They tell us to stop what we're doing and that D'Amato has nothing to do with Jane O'Brien Media. On top of that, David D'Amato's also hired a New Zealand lawyer. He's demanding an apology and retraction, or else he'll see us in a New Zealand court.
Letters from private investigators and a barrister in Auckland appear as the guys get on another United Airlines flight.
We're now being attacked by Jane O'Brien's lawyers on one side and David D'Amato's on the other, both insisting they have nothing to do with each other. Once again, we're way out of our depth.
They collect their bags.
Things get even more surreal with a phone call from Michigan, where there's a very different tickling operation also being run by Jane.
They drive through the Michigan snow.
A couple of the guys are nervous because they've threatened us, death threats. I've had private phone calls come in, we'll kill you. And then Jane sent some stuff that was, I guess, like really threatening to a couple of the guys and telling us we better keep our mouths shut and not talk to you. And I got a phone call from a weird number out of Jamaica. I got another one today saying if I talk to you or anybody else, then they're coming for me.
Glancing at each other, they listen on speakerphone as they drive past a snow-capped sign saying, "Welcome to Muskegon Shoreline."
So, like, crime is pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Murder, robberies, rape, I mean, theft. It's all up there. Especially for being as small as what it is. We've made it now on the top 100 most dangerous cities in the United States.
Do you think, on some level, Jane kind of directed things here because it is a poor area?
Yeah. You know, the poverty level, you know, is easy to target, you know, thousands of dollars in kids' hands is, that's a big, big deal.
Jordan Scalacci, tickle recruiter, sits in the passenger seat as they drive past small houses and a heavily wrapped up man dragging a sled past a disused factory. An MMA crowd stands with arms respectfully clasped and hands on hearts as a woman in red sings in the octagon cage. Thousands of spectators sit in the bleachers or at long tables ringside and cheer as two wiry men face each other.
Jane has taken a liking to one of Muskegon's main sports, mixed martial arts, a group of young athletic men desperate for extra money.
A clean-shaven redhead flings his right foot to a tattooed man's jaw, who parries with his arms and forces him back with a feint of his knee. The redhead trips his opponent to the floor, who puts his guard up as they grapple on the ground.
That's what she was trying to do, is break into the MMA world. Because it's not illegal to tickle somebody to get out of a submission in mixed martial arts. Like, she was trying to pitch that because she, like, looked it up and all the rules and everything. But if you tickle a guy in the middle of that ring to get out of a submission, you might step out of the cage and get punched in the face. Like, never in a million years out of all my fights would I ever try to tickle somebody to get out of a submission. Fuck no.
Jordan Scalacci, tough and athletic in his 20s, speaks in a living room. Back in the cage, a man in white shorts pounds his opponent, and the referee stops the fight and raises the victor's arm.
As an ex-fighter, Jordan was paid to recruit tickling talent in the town. He's the only one in Muskegon prepared to appear on camera.
She offered my one buddy a 2014 Chevy Cruze and $30,000.
What for? To tickle?
Yeah. Just because, like, she liked him.
Yeah, right. He was a,
like,
favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Asians and redheads are what they call premiums. If you get those, like, she gives you bonuses.
I'm Jordan Schlacky, and this is CET. We're going to be having a discussion, more of a debate today, about whether tickling is effective in a combat situation.
A younger Jordan and his friend wrestle on a bed.
We end up setting up a tickle cell, like, where you get guys to come in, we'll pay you, and you pay them to audition.
No.
So we'd choose a hotel, nothing fancy, and the guys would come in, hang out, you know, smoke, drink, eat pizza, fucking, and we'd hurry up and run through, you know, 5, 6, 7 guys.
You motherfucker.
So you were looking after the tickle cell in Muskegon?
Yeah, they have them set up all over the U.S. Ohio, Michigan, Florida, New York. I mean, they're everywhere.
Right. And they're all for Jane?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Different guys tickle wrestle on hotel beds.
Well, that's where a lot of people started getting really, really upset, man, because all of a sudden these videos that are supposed to be just auditions were on YouTube, Vimeo, and every other site you could imagine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody was okay with that. One of the guys, Brody, like, his family was very upset with him. It was all over. Like, people just picked on him and picked on him. You know, he was underage, still in school. And it wasn't supposed to go out on the internet. It wasn't supposed to be put up. And, you know, that just kind of sucked. Because, like I said, it hit one of the hardest, like, this whole situation. And then being underage and his parents, who do you have to turn to? Who are you going to attack? No, Jane O'Brien's a ghost. Nobody knows who it is.
Polar bear? No. This is Colton. This is my nephew.
Hey, man.
Colton, how old are you? How old are you? You're free? You're free? All right.
I'm David. It's nice to meet you, sir.
I was really, really reluctant when Jordan started talking about this, and he's like, this lady seems straight and legit, Mom. I'm like, you know, these boys are young. It's easy to believe, but when you're old, Mom, you're a little more leery for the boys, and I was very leery right from get-go that the boys were going to get into trouble and this was not legit.
David meets Jordan's family as they watch TV in the living room, and later Jordan roams the streets with a cigarette.
She has all the money in the world, that seems like, whoever it is, to be able to do this, but they're waiting for that day that you rely on that as a sole income. That was her big, I think, power trip. She waited until a bunch of us relied on that income, because that was our only source of income. We'd been doing it for so long, we didn't think. She waited until she had complete control, basically, over your situation, and that's when she wanted to yank that rug right out from under you.
Jordan's eyebrows shoot up, and his jaw tightens.
David D'Amato. What, have you heard that name before? In relation to all this stuff?
Like, I'm literally, like, trembling for right now.
Are you actually shaking?
Yeah, I'm actually, like, shaking. Like, if that, like, I'm not, like I said, like, from being from, like, here, like, I don't take shit. Like, if I met up with that guy, I'd punch him right out, and when he woke up, he'd be strapped to a chair with an, like, I'd be like, dude, you're telling me everything right now.
Jordan confides in David by a stairwell, who takes to the road again.
The tickling's still happening in this town.
The money's endless. I've never seen it stop coming and just flowing. And it's not just through Michigan and LA. It's everywhere. Like, England, Australia, Italy. I mean, the money's still coming and going.
This tickling empire is way bigger than we ever imagined. We're going to New York to find David D'Amato.
They drive well into the night and through a tunnel. They emerge onto a busy New York bridge, with the Manhattan skyline twinkling in the distance. The next day, the Hudson River is frozen over, as David and the crew drive along a snowy road to Garden City.
Feel the rich / bad aura.
David D'Amato's address is listed in Garden City, an affluent suburb of Long Island. He lives on the top floor of this building.
Good morning, it's Robert speaking.
Oh, hi, it's David speaking. I just wanted to talk to David D'Amato.
I can't give you his phone number. I really can't even give you any personal information on him.
Okay.
Do you know him?
Yes, I do, yes.
You're a friend of his?
I'm not a friend, no, but I've been trying to get in touch with him, but have been struggling.
Okay, what I do is I have a way of, like, leaving him a message. I can't guarantee that he's going to call you back if he doesn't know you.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
The doorman hangs up, and back in the car, David shuts his eyes and collects himself.
D'Amato never calls us back, and we've got no other way to contact him directly.
In a lift, David and Dylan stare at the floor, dejected.
So, it's still tomorrow.
But that night, we get a frustrating phone call.
My concern is that we can't do more or less anything we have planned for the rest of the trip. No, it's like, it's fucking insane. Okay, bye-bye.
All the threats are worrying our film's producer. He doesn't want us to risk provoking any further legal action from D'Amato.
So he's saying, well, what if you do everything that you're going to do except don't go and chase D'Amato down? And I'm like, well, anything we do that lets D'Amato know we're looking into him again.
Well, from now on, and is
yeah,
that...
Yeah, literally. So he says, well, maybe we cut the thing short then. Just go home. No, it's like, it's fucking insane.
In their hotel room, Dylan hangs up the phone with irritation. The next day, David journeys to Lower Manhattan on the subway.
The next day, we put chasing D'Amato on hold. I want to know how on earth a former deputy principal pays for all this. We can't find any sign he's earning money from the videos, but he's spending lots of money making them. He's flying up to 10 people into LA almost every month from all over the world, putting them up in a nice hotel, paying them thousands in cash. And that's not even taking into account the cost of running tickle cells like the one in Muskegon. Both David's parents are now deceased, but his father's law firm is one of Wall Street's biggest. Maybe David is reaping the benefits of his father's empire.
Oh, hi. I just had an inquiry about the relationship with David D'Amato with the company, son of George D'Amato. Is there someone I could talk to about this?
No, I'm sorry. And Mr. D'Amato's been gone for a long time.
Yeah. I'm looking into the background to his son, David, and I'm just trying to figure out whether he's got any financial relationship with the company still.
Oh, I really don't know. I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Is there someone I could talk to at D'Amato and Lynch to find out?
Not that I believe, no, I'm sorry.
Okay, but there must be a way to find out, surely.
Not here, thank you.
David stares at his phone as the call cuts and walks along the frozen Hudson. The voice of George D'Amato's former secretary can be heard.
I haven't seen David in quite a few years. I have no knowledge of him now. Not in many years have I had any contact with him, so I really couldn't give you any information.
Yeah, he's been pretty aggressive towards me, so I'm just trying to figure out what his motivation is.
Get away from him, that's all I can tell you.
Really?
Yeah. Stay away from him.
In Central Park, a hawk catches a squirrel and flies off clutching the body.
This was every conversation I had with anyone even remotely related to David D'Amato. I can't tell you anything, but stay away. But all I want to do is the opposite. Someone has to confront this bully, lawsuits or not.
Cold air blasts their car as David and Dylan stake out David D'Amato's imposing apartment building. Dylan holds up a picture of D'Amato's white Mercedes SUV on his phone.
Okay, so this is the car we're looking for. It's a Mercedes-Benz ML 430.
They watch the entrance to the apartment.
David D'Amato's gone out of his way to avoid us. We figure if we wait outside his apartment long enough, eventually he'll have to leave.
So that's a Chevrolet. Oh, hang on a second. What's this?
Okay, there's a car there, I can see it. Now, just on the edge, hang on.
Grand Cherokee. Well, maybe just a Cherokee, but it's certainly not a Mercedes.
A similar-looking SUV drives away, and the guys continue the stakeout.
What's the time? 2:44. So we've been here for, like, 4 hours?
We've been waiting like this for days.
Come on.
And it seems like he'll never come out.
Okay. Let me just check. It is the right type of car.
It's got white plates. Hang on.
Okay. It's him.
He starts the engine.
He's coming out. Just wait here. Just sit here. All right, stay cool.
David anxiously waits at a corner and follows the Mercedes as it drives past.
Okay, he's up here. He's in the right-hand line, as in the left-hand lane?
Yeah.
He hasn't turned right. One car behind him. You're right in his... in his mirror now.
With two white SUVs in front of them, David follows the wrong one, almost colliding into D'Amato as he changes lanes. They try to control their nerves as they sit bumper to bumper with D'Amato.
I'm breathing heavily.
Yeah, same.
Okay. It's cool. We're right behind him now, so back off a bit so we're not going to be too close. Stay back, David. We're going to have to stop right behind him now. You might have to take the camera off the tripod, Dom.
Yeah, camera off tripod.
Starbucks? Okay, it'll be a while. Perfect.
Okay, I'm just going to go and have a conversation when he comes out. I've got my phone if you need me.
Okay.
With a nervous look at Dylan, David gets out of the car and walks across the street.
I'm about to meet this man who's been such a threatening figure in so many lives, including my own. And I have simply no idea what to expect.
He stuffs his hands in his jacket pockets and leans against a lamppost, keenly watching the Starbucks entrance, two storefronts away. D'Amato, with longer grayer hair than his mugshot, walks into the street. And David approaches him as Dylan gets out of the car with a camera.
He's coming out.
Mr. D'Amato. Hi, it's Dave Farrier. Hey, how are you? I just wanted to talk to you briefly, if I could. Because I'm just worried about the legal letters you've sent me, and I just wanted to know if we could just talk about it face-to-face.
There is a legal issue about me seeing you right now.
Is there?
Yes. You're in this country on a tourist visa. By doing anything related to so-called journalism, you're in violation of the federal law here. I'll be back for a long time.
I'm on a journalism visa, so I'm okay to be here. But
we're going to let INS see about that.
Could we just talk a little bit about...
You shouldn't be doing
that. I just wanted to find out what's going on.
There's nothing that's going on.
Because the last I heard, I was going to be in a US court and a New Zealand court, and I really just wanted to sort this out face to face. And I just want to sort of, I mean, I'm not here to antagonize. I just genuinely want to be able to help out.
Quite a distance to antagonize.
Well, you did say you were going to sue me, and I just want to sort this issue out.
I will see you at the right venue, believe me.
Could you contact me if possible?
The heavyset man climbs back into his SUV, and David, Dylan and their cameraman film as he drives away. They drive along a bridge.
I went away feeling numb. D'Amato was calm, going instantly to legal threats. Which is what he's always done, I suppose. As Terry, as Jane, as himself.
Photos of D'Amato's three personas cycle through on the screen.
But after all this, I still couldn't help but wonder, were we totally certain that D'Amato really was Jane and Debbie? Could we be wrong? So we went back to where it all started, those 300 domain names connected to the Nita Dietzen group. And that's when things went a little crazy. On one of those domain names, there was just a directory listing, including a folder called My Documents.
David looks through a folder of documents.
It looks like D'Amato has accidentally made hundreds of his private files public on the internet.
The documents are printed out and laid on the floor in a grid.
There's D'Amato's signature on Anita Dietzen registration form.
The highlighted page is shown.
There's also a contract with the investigation company he hired to look into us. The address is exactly the same as the address used by Jane O'Brien Media when booking rooms at the Hilton in New Zealand. Then there are documents and signatures for Debbie Kuhn and Jane O'Brien, who's also got her own credit card. And it turns out that D'Amato did finally get that law degree from Hofstra University in 2011. He's also been telling the boys to enter the United States on a tourist visa, even though they're working. And it's finally clear to me how he funds his tickling empire. As of late 2012, he had almost $6 million in his checking account, and his living expenses were being paid by a trust established by his father.
A will appears.
He also inherited millions from his mother's estate when she died in 2014. It's all family money.
D'Amato's inheritance is over $5 million.
There are also lots of emails sent from Jane O'Brien's legal department. With this in mind, we call in to see Romeo Salter, the lawyer hired by Jane O'Brien Media, who's been sending us all the legal threats. We want to ask him about the correspondence his office has sent us.
But I just thought you'd be curious to see things being issued in LA County Court, sort of that's signed off here with your name. Comes another example of that with that email address.
Yeah.
To that, as opposed to you. I mean, we got the one from you originally, which we, that's fine. We don't need to talk about that.
It's very simple. I only sent one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
there's your answer.
Yeah.
I'll see what I can do to make those stop. Have they stopped?
We haven't heard anything for a little while. They're listing your address as their corporate headquarters, though.
My address?
Yeah, like if you look at
your office.
JaneO'BrienMedia.com, your address is listed as their corporate headquarters.
Yeah, but it's not my...
No, on their website.
But it's not...
I don't know if it's... It says Office of Corporate Counsel and New York headquarters.
Yeah, well, that's my address.
Yeah.
But it's not there.
It's crazy with this so much.
I mean, is this weird to you? Is this... This person has taken
weird.
On...
In his office, Romeo Salta stares at their laptop, flustered.
Almost every legal letter we'd received from Salta was fake. Like so many things connected to D'Amato, they were all just lies. lies to support his addiction to tickling videos. I started this journey curious about a bizarre sport called competitive endurance tickling. But I now think this was never even about tickling.
Tickle videos appear.
This is about power, control, and harassment. It's about one person's twistedness and how far that can go. One person who's managed to shelter himself with money to keep his obsession going. But now it's his life exposed. For once, it's him on camera.
As they stake out D'Amato's apartment, David makes a call.
Before we leave America, there's one last phone call I want to make. It's a name we found in the documents, one of David D'Amato's last surviving family members.
Hello?
Oh, hi, is that Dorothy?
Yes.
Oh, hi, my name's David Farrier. I'm a journalist from New Zealand. How are you?
Okay.
You're good. Hey, sorry, it's probably a bit of a strange call to receive out of the blue, but I'm doing a story about David D'Amato.
D'Amato's stepmother.
Oh, in what way?
He's sort of back to the tickling stuff again.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, God. Well, I will tell you that I have no contact with him at all.
I mean, did you think all this had sort of come to an end?
I did think, of course, it came to an end because he served time, which I'm sure you know.
Mm.
But I don't understand. I don't understand why he went back to doing this. I'm like in shock. How long has he been doing this?
It's never stopped.
Dorothy D'Amato opens up in a lengthy call.
I think he has a split personality. It's like that fine line between genius and insanity. I don't know if he's gay or he's asexual, but he's never had a girlfriend that I ever knew of. I asked my husband once if he would be upset if he found out he was gay, and he said that he would be upset and that but he would get over it. But he was an only child, and you know, he wanted grandchildren. He had a very, very strange childhood. The kids used to make fun of him all the time. And he was very close to his mother. And his mother was very protective of him. She never let him ride a bike or go skiing or do anything. She was always afraid that he would get hurt. And from what I understand, the kids used to come around the house and they used to make fun of him. And once they locked him in the locker in school. And, you know, he was a teacher. And they threw him out of school. You know, I was afraid of him. Because I'm alone and, you know, I was afraid of him. So, you know, I'm afraid of him.
The screen goes black, and text appears. Despite impersonating lawyers, creating fake identities and harassing young men, David D'Amato has only ever been found guilty on two misdemeanor charges of computer fraud and abuse. At the time of the completion of this film, David D'Amato had an office at a Long Island law firm. Documents obtained indicated he was employed by the firm as a senior legal consultant. After David D'Amato was captured on camera, all legal correspondence with the documentary makers ceased. Debbie and Jane also fell silent. Jane O'Brien Media still runs competitive endurance tickling shoots in Los Angeles and around the world. The credits roll. Directors: David Farrier and Dylan Reeve. Cinematographer: Dominic Fryer. Editor: Simon Koldrick. Producer: Carthew Neal. Associate producers: Richard Ivey and Stephen Fry. Executive producer: Justin Pemberton. Executive producer for HBO: Sheila Nevins. Senior producer for HBO: Nancy Abraham. Contributors: TJ, Richard Ivey, Brian Chase LaChance, David Starr, Alton, Hal Karp, Debbie Skobolinkov, Jordan Scilacci. Original score: Rody Kirkcaldy and Florian Svietnig. The soundtrack: Stirring Them Up as a Keeper of a Menagerie, His Wild Beasts. A low and distant sound gradually swelling and increasing, their roots reaching quite under the house. Fearing that they would be lightheaded for want of food and also sleep. Perhaps the wildest sound that is ever heard here, making the woods ring far and wide. Leaves expanded, maybe prevailing blue mixed with yellow sand. After soaking 2 years and then lying high 6 months, it was perfectly sound through waterlogged past drying. Written by Shane Carruth, Control. Courtesy of ERBP. Copyright, A Ticklish Tale Limited, 2016. All rights reserved.